This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For cultivating progress across the South, for working to unconditionally improve the lives of all, and for the bold underwriting of every Gravy podcast, SFA thanks our visionary Louisville, Kentucky friends, Pam and Brooke Smith.
Christmas is Sausage Balls, a new book, and a whole day to read it, and watching my now very grown children still build a Lego set.
For me, it's a congealed salad of pecans and fruit cocktail suspended in cherry jello. The movie Love Actually, and the 3.5-foot-tall inflatable of Peppa Pig in an elf costume we purchased in the dark COVID winter of 2021.
For me, it's my family's nightly off-key sing-along around the Advent wreath, an aluminum silver Christmas tree with colorful lights and hundreds of Hallmark ornaments purchased by my mama, and the Chex Mix I learned to make from my husband's grandmother.
For many Filipinos living abroad, Christmas comes in the form of a 3-foot by 3-foot balikbayan box. Inside, Spam, Vienna sausages, and imported chocolate, just to name a few. Recall home and herald Christmas.
Katie Jane Fernelius first reported this story back in 2021, a year when all of us were figuring out how to celebrate holidays away from the people and places that we love. But in reality, this is a story for every year, especially for those of us who can't be home for Christmas.
In this episode of Gravy, we learn to celebrate Christmas the Filipino way, and that means balikbayan boxes.
I'm Melissa Hall.
I'm Sarah Camp Milam.
I'm Mary Beth Lassiter.
You're listening to Gravy.
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 Gravy. Gravy.
A production of the Southern Foodways Alliance, Gravy tells the stories of the changing American South.
Katie Jane Fernelius is driving this sleigh.
It's Christmas time, the time of year when we line up at the post office to mail packages full of wrapped gifts, when we stuff stacks of holiday cards into already overflowing collection boxes, and, if we're able to, when we travel long distances to see loved ones. To some of us, mailing gifts, sending cards, hectic holiday travel, they all seem just customary, something we do because that's what people do and have done during the holidays. But in the Philippines, sending gifts home, even traveling home for Christmas, is not just customary. It's a state policy called balikbayan. Balikbayan has become an umbrella term for all sorts of efforts by the government of the Philippines to encourage the millions of Filipino citizens working overseas to return home and spend their hard-earned money. And if they're unable to make it back home, well, then they can send something called a balikbayan box in their place.
And it would be larger than me as a kid, and it felt like Christmas. And then when you open it, the smell, I always thought like, oh, that's what, you know, out of the country smells like.
When Royal Sumikat was a little girl living in the Philippines, she would receive balikbayan boxes from her dad, who was working as an engineer out of the country. He couldn't necessarily afford to travel home regularly, but he would send balikbayan boxes in his place. And these boxes would always be packed full of treats.
And it was always like chocolates, imported chocolates that I would be really excited about.
Do you remember what type of chocolates?
Oh my gosh, Ferrero Rocher, Toblerones. Toblerones were the best. The nuggets, you know, the Hershey's nuggets, those were, you know, I love the toffee and almond one. And my dad would wrap it really well because, you know, in the heat, it would melt quickly. So, and it's hot in the Philippines.
Bleak buying boxes were boxes that could be shipped completely tax-free, so long as everything fit inside the box and met the acceptable weight limits. So Filipinos working overseas would often stuff these boxes to the brim with all sorts of foreign goods. Tubes of toothpaste, packs of pantyhose, bulk bottles of shampoos and conditioners, sneakers, hand-me-downs, boxes of pencils and crayons, as seen on TV kitchen gadgets, and lots of canned food.
Spam, of course. Corned beef is huge. There's this corned beef that I really love. It's like New Zealand corned beef, and it's the best. I got my balik
bayan box. There's even a viral YouTube video about this by a Filipino comedian, Mikey Bustos. Some Colgate and Lubrix, imported corned beef. I got my balik bayan box. But to better understand why the government of the Philippines instituted the bleak buying program, including the boxes, and how it impacted Filipinos like Royal and led to her lifelong love of corned beef, you first need to understand the relationship between the Philippines and the United States.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
And that relationship really begins with the Spanish-American War.
Let me go back to the days when Admiral Dewey won the Battle of Manila Bay and American sovereignty was established over the islands.
Now, the Spanish had colonized the Philippines for over 300 years. But the people of the Philippines resisted that rule. And in 1897, they revolted against the Spanish Empire. Around the same time, the people of Cuba were also staging a revolution against the Spanish Empire in their country. And the United States sent a naval blockade to protect Cuba and its tobacco and sugar plantations. This blockade prompted Spain to declare war against the United States. In short, the United States expanded its military missions beyond Cuba and ended up fighting the Spanish in both the Caribbean and the Pacific. In the Philippines, U.S. officials partnered with revolutionaries there, promising them independence when the war was over. But when Spain ceded the territories to the United States in 1898, the U.S. broke that promise and instead decided to assume rule of the Philippines itself. Again, the people of the Philippines resisted outside colonial rule and fought to establish their own independent republic. Thus commenced the Philippine-American War. There were, by some estimates, at least 20,000 military casualties and 200,000 civilian casualties. The United States declared victory over the Philippines in 1902, and the U.S. would continue to colonize the Philippines in some capacity until 1946.
I like to think that the history of the Philippine Islands in the last 44 years provides, in a very real sense, a pattern for the future of other small nations and peoples of the world.
So when the Spanish were in the Philippines, one of the ways that they controlled the Philippines was by not giving them education. The Americans were the opposite. The way they were going to control the Filipinos was by giving them education.
Jade Alburo is a librarian at UCLA who focuses on the study of Southeast Asia and the Pacific Islands. She wrote her master's thesis on bleak buy-in boxes. She also grew up in the Philippines herself. She draws a straight line from U.S. colonialism to the bleak buy-in program. And point A for her is the education systems that the U.S. put into place in the Philippines.
Like, education is great, obviously, but a lot of that is like, Americans are superior, American goods are superior. America is the land of milk and honey and the American dream, you know, so there was a lot of that going on. But also a lot of it was to like inculcate Filipinos with the fact that American goods are superior so that they can create a market for American goods in the Philippines.
This is the Philippines, our land of beauty, rich in age-old customs. Long ago, long before the war, the taste and quality of Coca-Cola won its way into the hearts of everyone and continues today to be an accepted, desired, refreshing custom of people everywhere throughout the land. In fact, throughout the world.
Yes, there was Coca-Cola. But there was also Spam, Vienna sausages, corned beef. Canned goods like these first came into the country through American occupation. But they became even more popular and widespread throughout the Philippines during and after World War II. Jade says to include canned goods in a bleak buy-in box is to include foods that, at one point in time, were seen by Filipinos as a symbol of aspiration, prestige, power, of America.
So that it became associated by Filipinos as these are American goods. These are good because they're from America. And so even though Americans here these days wouldn't care about it, for Filipinos, it's still like, this is a symbol of America, the canned goods.
But the contents of the bleak buy-in box are not the only thing that shows American influence in the Philippines. In fact, the bleak buy-in program itself speaks to a more complicated and enduring relationship between the two countries, especially as more and more Filipinos came to the United States for work. And this impacted not just what was in the box, but everything that the bleak buy-in box came to mean for Filipino families.
When we come back, we'll learn how and when the Philippines bleak buy-in program got its start. But first...
For over 125 years, Lodge has been crafting quality cookware in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. It started with the iconic Lodge cast iron skillet made for cooking anything anywhere, and then turned to the seasoned cast iron Dutch oven and camp ovens. Now, Lodge is making history with USA Enamel, the only line of colorful enameled cast iron made in the United States. And like all Lodge cast iron cookware, USA Enamel is designed to last for generations. Visit LodgeCastIron.com to purchase your own USA Enamel Dutch oven. For Lodge's longtime commitment to the Southern Foodways Alliance and this podcast, we thank them.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Before the break, we learned about the bleak buy-in box, which overseas Filipino workers would send to their families in the Philippines. These boxes typically included treats like Spam, Coca-Cola, and Toblerone. And we learned about how America colonized the Philippines, leading to a demand for these American goods. But how exactly did the bleak buy-in program get started? Well, in 1965, Ferdinand Marcos was inaugurated as president of the Philippines. Over the course of his presidency, Marcos would indebt the country and ultimately institute martial law.
I have received hundreds and hundreds of telegrams from all corners of the Philippines congratulating you and incidentally me for the proclamation of martial law, for the sudden cessation of anarchy and of criminality throughout the land.
When unemployment skyrocketed under Marcos, his government instituted a program to try to get Filipino workers jobs overseas. Many of those workers went to the Middle East in the wake of the oil boom there, but hundreds of thousands also went to the United States, which had recently opened its doors to more immigrants. In 1965, the United States passed the Immigration and Nationality Act. This act got rid of country-based quotas and gave preference to immigrants who had family in the states or who were skilled workers. For Filipinos, who had American schooling in their own country, the United States was a desirable option. They could put their professional skills and English language fluency to immediate use. This era in immigration drove a lot of Filipinos, especially women, to cities like Houston, Texas, where many were quickly employed as nurses. And as the oil industry grew there, it brought engineers from the Philippines as well. With thousands of workers overseas, Marcos and the government of the Philippines needed to figure out a strategy for assuaging concerns over martial law. They also hoped to convince overseas workers to spend their American dollars in the Philippines, even if they no longer lived there full-time. Though whether this latter effect worked is debatable.
So they created this balik bayan program. So balik means return and bayan means to the country. So balik bayan is like a returning native, but because they're mostly immigrants to the U.S., this return is not permanent. It's like a visit, you know. So they're encouraging everybody to visit, and they did that by offering incentives.
Those incentives included tax incentives, hotel discounts, decreased airfares on Philippine Airlines, and very generous baggage allowances.
When it initially started, they were building on the Filipinos' nostalgia for their family, but also for traditions. And so I think they initially started it around Christmas time, and they had sent a lot of invitations to the traditional Philippine Christmas, and they asked students to like write to relatives to come home for Christmas. And then the Department of Transportation encouraged towns and cities to really, really play up this, you know, traditional Filipino Christmas and play up the customs that we grew up with.
Christmas is a big deal in the Philippines. Many families attend a Dawn Mass, send their children caroling around the neighborhood, and decorate their homes with carols.
Christmas is my favorite holiday, and I think it's because I am Filipino. And I think, like, it was special for us because, like, we are Catholic, and I think for a lot of Catholic countries, Christmas is incredibly, like, a big deal.
For the Marcos government, to connect balik bayan boxes to Christmas was to make sending balik bayan boxes not just part of your duty to your country, but also part of religious and family rituals. However, over the years, balik bayan boxes have become less of a specifically Christmas tradition and more of a year-round practice, though they're still the most popular at Christmas. According to some estimates, somewhere between 5 and 7 million balik bayan boxes arrive in the Philippines each year.
Still, you know, it's an ongoing practice. Its popularity continues. And it's not just a U.S. thing anymore. So anywhere where there's a lot of Filipinos, their balik bayan boxes exist, and there's shipping companies that ship to the Philippines.
But as Jade's own research has shown, balik bayan boxes are about so much more than the American goods they carry. They might also carry photos, letters, even cassette tapes. Royal remembers the tapes her parents sent back and forth to each other.
It was like between the 70s and 80s, and my parents would send the tapes back to each other, back and forth, along with letters. My dad would send it with balik bayan boxes. And these are cassette tapes that they recorded their voice on.
Why did your parents send tapes to each other?
Because long-distance phone calls were incredibly expensive and unreliable back then, which was fascinating because their communication was never in real time. And so my mom saved a lot of those tapes, and I feel like, it was like traveling back in time listening to it, because I heard myself as a baby singing my ABCs to my dad. He heard us like cooing and babbling as babies until we were like singing our ABCs, and he just heard us grow up on these voice tapes.
Royal says it was hard for her dad, who lived an ocean away from them, to hear her and her brother growing up on these tapes. It was proof that they were growing up without him. Eventually, he brought Royal, her brother, and her mom to Saudi Arabia, where he was working. Later, when he got a job in Houston, Texas, they all moved with him again. And Royal still lives in Houston today. As an adult, Royal has listened back to those old cassette tapes that her parents sent each other in those bleak buy-in boxes. And she's struck by something she didn't quite remember from her own childhood.
Growing up, it felt like life seemed very normal. There was no choice but to live life normally.
These tapes record Royal, as a child, singing about a garden or a lost balloon. But her mom describes neighborhood patrols, tattooed gang members, a squatter whose motorized tricycle is stolen. She admits she is scared of going out at night. On his tapes, her dad says he's working overtime. He wants to build their savings. He watches the news from afar. He sees the headlines about the economic crisis in the country. He wonders whether the prices of groceries are going up. Should he send more money back home for them? Will they be okay? Revisiting these tapes transformed how Royal saw her childhood in the large bleak buy-in boxes that brought her Toblerone and corned beef.
Growing up, you know, my parents are telling me all these hardships, but I felt okay, you know, like my childhood seemed normal, and that just means that my parents did a really good job and worked really hard to keep us from experiencing the hardships that they faced. We still had birthdays, they still had parties, because it's like, what are we supposed to do? It wasn't like it was Filipino people's choice to leave the country to find better opportunities. It was built that way. You know, the country was destabilized, so there was no choice but for Filipinos to be the export and labor to go to all these different countries. So they were the ones that were sending money back and, you know, boxes back. And so this was kind of like a concession, like, okay, we've sent you away and you're separate from your family now. But here is a tax-free option for you to send things back home to them so it's not so difficult.
Today, Royal's an artist. Though she grew up receiving bleak buy-in boxes from her dad, now that she lives in Houston, she's the one mailing her own boxes to relatives back home in the Philippines. And Royal actually made an exhibit inspired by the bleak buy-in box and all that it represented to her family, which showed in a gallery hosted by the Asia Society in Houston.
And so what I did was, it's 8-foot by 8-foot box. You can walk into it, and like I lined it up with paper. I taped it up with the same kind of packing tape that you would see in a balik buying box. And then I added boxes that you would receive. Like I brought chocolate. I added corned beef in it, like diapers. Clothes, old clothes that I no longer use. There's like a Virgin Mary at the front of it because my grandma's matron deity was the Virgin Mary. And then I put candles everywhere. They're LED candles. And then there's pictures that I have clipped all over the walls of the balik buy-in box. There's a lot of pictures where my mom did, you know, the 10-second timer, and it's just me and my brother and my mom. And so you can tell whenever my dad was gone, you know? And then there's pictures of my dad doing mundane things like, hey, look, I'm ironing. Is this how you do it? You know, like he was just doing his own stuff. And so it's basically an altar to my family's migratory experience.
So immigration displaces people, and it displaces the relationships they have with their loved ones. How do I feel about them? I mean, I appreciate the fact that, you know, this, we have this vehicle to send goods to the Philippines in a cheap way, which was is just important to me now, to send goods to the Philippines and if people needed things or to show them that we care. But for me now, that I'm older, I don't know. I think I'm a little bit more analytic or a little bit more critical about the whole practice.
Jade knows that the bleak buying program was cooked up by the Marcos dictatorship as quasi-propaganda for martial law, and that U.S. colonialism set the stage for both the desire for American goods and the mass exodus of Filipino workers. But in her research, she found that for many people, sending bleak buy-in boxes remains an important form of caring for loved ones and a way to stay connected to the Philippines, even if they live abroad.
Well, and the thing is, because bleak buy-in boxes are such a Filipino thing that it's kind of become its own identity. And so people are not going to go away from that now, because now it's like part of the culture. It is just like, it's part of the history. And so much of the history in the Philippines, the recent history, is all about migration, right? Mm-hmm. So whether or not it's a marketing scheme, it still fulfills a basic need that migrants and immigrants need to do and practice so that they feel closer to the family that they left behind. Like for Christmas this year, we actually did send a box because of the pandemic. I figured, well, it might be nice to send them something. And so we did. So I'm like, okay, what would these people like? You know, so, you know, we did send them the cankers and we did send them the chocolate. One of the people that we sent the stuff to said, oh, why is it that the stuff that we send, like the boxes that we send, why does it smell like America? And I'm just like, what does that even mean? What does America smell like?
Katie Jane Fernelius reported this episode. She is a journalist and producer based in New Orleans, Louisiana. Her reporting has taken her into megachurches, comedy clubs, garbage dumps, and private cities across the world. She has also produced radio for Investigation Discovery, Quartz, BBC World Service, Audible, The Guardian, and elsewhere. She received a Fulbright Fellowship and a BBC Sundance Institute Fellowship.
We thank Wendell Patrick for Gravy's theme music and Jazar for our donor music. We owe a huge thank you to Clay Jones and Broadcast Studios of Oxford for recording and mixing Gravy. Basically, Gravy sounds good because Clay knows what he's doing.
Managing editor for Gravy and all other SFA media is my co-host, Sarah Camp Milam. Olivia Terenzio is our podcast editor. Heather Cole is our fact checker. My co-host, Mary Beth Lassiter, is our publisher.
Want to learn more about the changing American South? Visit us at southernfoodways.org. Read oral histories, watch films, or listen to this podcast. While you're there, become a member or make a donation. Your dollars fund our work and help us make more gravy.
I'm Melissa Hall.
I'm Sarah Camp Milam.
I'm Mary Beth Lassiter.
Gravy is proud to be a part of APT Podcast Studios.